Welcome back. Joining us on the Saitama Hotline, he's a sports attorney. He's also the co-host of the Con Detrimental podcast. Dan Lust, welcome to the Scott Hamilton Show.
Hey, Scott, my pleasure to join you. I feel like these alarm bells are going off in college sports, so always happy to get the call and talk about it.
I'm happy to hear somebody say they realized there were alarm bells going off. I'm hearing alarm bells going off in East Tennessee out of Knoxville, and I'm sure you've been following this situation with Jeremy Pruitt and his standoff with UT. Does he have a leg to stand on? I mean, you being an attorney, would they make such a, I don't want to say threat, but would they make such a threat if they didn't have anything to back it up?
Stranger things have happened, and I have been wading into the waters very closely on this. So you asked if Pruitt has a leg to stand on. Put it this way, I think the Pruitt case for him to stay with the university, if you look at his employment contract, there's, my understanding is, 30 fire for cause provisions. So let's say there's 30 legs, right, that his case is standing on. Tennessee finds one of those, right? They knock that leg out. That will certainly act as cause. So, you know, my understanding of the situation, one of the, you can talk about any one of these, but the reason he was fired, at least publicly, was that people underneath him were not being controlled properly. But one of the levels for cause is that if people that report to Pruitt are kind of acting out of control, that could certainly suffice as cause. And then at a higher level, you know, if his administration is conducting activities that are, quote, likely to lead to level one or level two violations, UT has cause to fire him underneath his employment contract. So, you know, obviously, I guess at a high level, right, we don't have any indication yet that there will be level one or level two violations, but the standard is likely. So, you know, if Tennessee felt it was likely and they felt that in good faith, you know, that's what their argument is going to come in. I haven't heard from Pruitt's camp any defense of the actual merits of the termination, right? We're just hearing, I'm going to cripple the school, which, you know, if you lead with your best punch, the threatening part, if you're leading with that, I don't know, it's going to raise some red flags.
How is that not public extortion? I mean, it seems to me that when you're making a threat that we're going to tell things, we're going to have things come out that's going to cripple the athletic department, it's going to embarrass the school. That seems to me to be almost blackmail. I'm not an attorney, but I take that as a threat, and I don't know how they can get away with that.
It's walking a fine line. You know, I just be very blunt. It's walking a very fine line. At the end of the day, Michael Lyons, the attorney for Jeremy Pruitt, he's being pretty, you know, at least transparent. He goes, I have an ethical obligation. I'm not allowed to bring empty threats like that. I am not bluffing. So, you know, but at the end of the day, right, I imagine these guys have tried to settle this for some time. And what he's essentially saying, just so people get a sense of this, if you have a merit, you know, a good case, sometimes you don't want to bring a case to trial because it takes, you know, years. It might take 3-4 years. So what Pruitt's side is saying, hey, settle this by October 29th or else we're going to bring a case. And, you know, maybe there will be a finding that we didn't have cause here or there was cause here. But in any event, it's going to go scorched earth. You know, it does kind of resemble extortion. But again, if the claim is not brought, I don't necessarily know if the extortion has occurred, but he is kind of, at least if he's not bluffing, right, he's leading with this threatening, you know, I'm going to cripple UT, this line I keep hearing over and over. So, I don't know, you have to think at a high level he's got something behind it. But then again, right, you put this ultimatum on the table. Before you put that ultimatum, you have to fire your best shot, right? And I'm hearing a lot of bark. Right. And I'm not hearing any defense of the firing for cause. I'm hearing, you know, we're going to preserve, you know, send a preservation notice to Rick Barnes, to Philip Fulmer, to donors, to former players. You're making an awful lot of noise, but I'm not hearing the substantive merits of that claim. And I would think from a legal perspective, you lead with that now. Right. That's your last punch before you're willing to play the I'm going to actually sue you card. And I don't know. We're not really seeing that part of it.
You know, a couple of thoughts I have, and I would like to get your opinion on this. One, I'm thinking that possibly, you know, Jeremy Pruitt being the football coach, being the main man in the athletic, one of the main men in the athletic department, he might have heard whispers of some improprieties in other departments, so he sent his attorney fishing. They're going to get documents hoping they can find some truth to whatever he had heard, and then there is what they're going to threaten them with when they find it, when they go through those documents. But also, Dan, I have to think, yeah, they go to court, or rather they file a lawsuit, and as you said, it could take months, years, it could be a while before everything comes to light in a courtroom. That would help them do more research and possibly even a settlement before it ever sees its day in court.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the goal, right? I think that it's on the buyout. You know, most of these situations get settled behind the scenes. We've had coaches, if it was just really level one and level two violations, we've had coaches get fired and get some form of a buyout. So I'm not really sure why Tennessee's taking a no-pay position. I imagine there's a number, maybe in the six figures, that would make sense to offer and settle up. I'm getting the impression that Tennessee is taking a no-pay position, that they're not offering any money. So maybe there's something else behind the scenes. And I will say this at a high level, right? Maybe they're thinking that this is a bluff, because you have to look at it from Pruitt's standpoint, right? If the guy wants to work in college sports ever again, it's not really going to look good on his resume, that in his arsenal, if it doesn't go well, that he's going to threaten to blow up the entire sports program, right? All the way top to bottom, from the AD to the basketball coach, right? That's certainly going to be on his resume. If it's just an empty threat, maybe the guy can salvage his college career. But if he really does go scorched earth and really try to, as his attorney said, this is a direct quote, cripple, right? That was the word, cripple UT. I'm not sure how the guy gets another job in college football. So maybe that's Tennessee's perspective, that they don't actually think he's going to follow through, because that would be, in a sense, kind of career suicide. So, you know, maybe that's Tennessee's standpoint here. And maybe they say that Pruitt has just as much to lose as Tennessee does. So, you know, I don't see any movement. But, again, we have a, you know, basically a couple days before this October 29th deadline. So we'll see what comes of it.
Dan, it's $12.6 million. I would give it all in too. I'd say, I'd cripple you, give me my money. That's all. But also, you have to think about his career earning potentials. He can make 10 times that if he's a good boy, he gets another good job.
Yeah, I mean, there's been coaches across the country that have level one, level two violations and survive and then thrive at their next stop. So for Pruitt to just say, okay, that's it. You know, he's a fairly young guy, saying that's it. I'm going scorched earth. Tennessee is dead. I'm going after them. It seems odd. It just seems, you know, a little bit unprecedented. It's not, certainly not unprecedented for an attorney to come out and say, "Hey, I'm gonna sue you," or else, you know, that's not unprecedented. What is a little bit strange is that Tennessee is not budging for a dollar. So maybe that's, the career record at Pruitt at Tennessee, which I know left a lot to be desired. I think it was one of the worst records in the history of the program for that many games. I mean, maybe there's something there, but, you know, I don't. It still seems odd that Tennessee's not willing to offer up anything, right? That's my reading of it. I haven't received confirmation of it, but it seems like they're taking a no-pay position, saying, if you want to sue us, go ahead and sue us. We feel really strongly about our case. So, you know, that's you got to commend Tennessee for sticking to their guns. But I imagine there's a dollar amount in there that makes sense to settle the case.
We're having an excellent conversation with Dan Lust, sports attorney. You can follow him on Twitter at SportsLawLust. And, Dan, one of the biggest stories this month is LSU making a coaching change. Ed Orgeron out. We don't know who the next coach would be. But one of the names floating around, as it always seems to be floating around when a major job comes open, is Jimbo Fisher. Jimbo Fisher has a $95.6 million contract with Texas A&M. And I'm wondering this, Dan, and again, you're the expert. It is a one-sided contract. If the school fires him for on-the-field performance, or lack thereof, rather, it has to pay him the full $95.6 million, but if he chooses to leave to go somewhere else, to go perhaps to an LSU, he doesn't have to pay them a daggone dime. How in the world did his agent, Jimmy Sexton, manage to pull that off, and how can any school sign off on that?
It's a fair question. I haven't looked at the contract myself, but assuming that is the case, that is a pretty sweetheart deal, right? And especially in the world of college football that we live in, where there's a lot of movement, that would be a double payday, even to come Jimbo Fisher's way. So we'll see. I'm seeing a lot of big names tied to the LSU opening. I saw the report, I'm sure you did as well, that maybe there's a bag of cash to be handed to Dabo Sweeney as well, which I don't know if I'd necessarily buy that. But, yeah, this is certainly a very desirable job. And if it's not Jimbo Fisher, right, there's usually that LSU seat is filled by a big name. So I don't know. We'll see. But if your understanding of the contract is correct, Sexton certainly pulled off a coup there.
How much do you think it's going to cost them to get a coach?
My reading of it, at least the reports that I've read, is that the new AD is a guy that makes a big splash every kind of school he's at. So I don't know. I mean, LSU is certainly a program that's not short on money. I think it's kind of an open the pocketbook type situation. You're coming basically a year and a half removed from a national title situation. I think it's a desirable job in obviously a huge conference. So yeah, I think you can name the price. I don't really think it would shock anybody if the coach that they brought in here is going to end up being one of the highest paid coaches, not just in the SEC, in the country. So So I'm not sure of exact dollar amounts, but this seat, at least from what I'm hearing, seems to certainly be a desirable one, and one of which the AD is historically paid to fill.
And Dan, before we let you go, what are you guys talking about on your podcast?
Man, we got a lot. We've been talking, sticking with the college sports realm, Nick Rolovich, the situation over in Washington State, certainly a fascinating one. If for those that are not following it, Nick Rolovich, there was a Washington State mandate. He's the coach over the Washington State Cougars. Washington State had a mandate that said you had to receive the vaccine by October 18th. And we knew ahead of time, right, that there was not, that Nick Rolovich, the coach, did not receive the vaccine. And wouldn't you know, October 18th comes and goes, and the school opts to fire him as well as four assistant coaches. So right now, brewing, we just covered it in our last podcast. But there is a lawsuit that Nick Rolovich is now planning to sue Washington State for religious discrimination for they denied his religious exemption for the vaccine. So I don't know. I'm not necessarily waiting into the religious and vaccine orders, but we got to go where sports law goes. So we took a close look at that lawsuit.
Yeah, it's a fascinating world, Dan. You guys are doing a great job. You can follow Dan Lust on Twitter at @SportsLawLust. Dan, really good stuff, buddy. Excellent conversation. I hope we can have you back again soon.
Of course. Tell me when. I'm there.
All righty, man. Appreciate it. It's Dan Lust. You can follow him on Twitter at @SportsLawLust.